You're listening to an official podcast of the New York City Church of Christ in Brooklyn, preaching God's word to New York's biggest borough.
Good afternoon, family. Before I start, one of my absolute best friends in the entire world got engaged yesterday to Kristen Johnson. Ugo and Kristen. Stand up. Yeah. Nigerian weddings, baby. The best kind of weddings. Wow. Last Sunday, we packed the U-Haul. We had a lot of help from people here. And then on Monday, we moved into our new place in Harlem, which is surreal that that's where things are at now. We moved to America in the beginning of 2006. I came here ready to cause enough trouble to get sent back home to Africa. But God had other plans. The team ministry here, Steve Ravel, Damon Coughlin, Rick Romaine, Lee Chan, Elliot Wilson, those guys were God's other plan and completely changed the trajectory of my life. I left Brooklyn to go to Queens for college. I honestly left unannounced because I didn't think I was going to make it. I didn't think I was going to stay faithful through college. I think I was going to make it past my freshman year. I think I was going to make it past my first semester of college. I was coming in at a pretty weak place. And God had other plans. Hannah changed my everything. Hannah absolutely, completely rearranged where my life was going to go. And baby, thank you so much for you. Yeah. I was convinced that I was going to go to law school, study immigration law, and help specifically West African immigrants who are having a hard time get their paperwork. That was my plan. God, though, had other plans. We went to Maryland because I respect Scott Davis, and he invited us to come. So I went to hang out with Scott. And then he said, hey, you want to work here? And we ended up moving to Maryland. We were in Maryland for 4 years, and I thought I was going to be in Maryland until Lucas graduated high school. That was my plan. We bought a house, we settled, we bought furniture. We bought, like, settled into a house furniture, the heavy kind. God had other plans. We moved back to New York to help my family during a very challenging time. Honestly, we came here with really no plan, other than we have to come and help my family. No job security. We had, up until the day we drove here, no tenants to take over our house in Maryland. We're just going to come and rough it and figure out, you know, how to make things work as it unfolded. But God had other plans. 2017 was the hardest year of my life. And now, 2 years removed, after being convinced that I would never heal from the trauma of losing the head of my family, my wife and I are moving to Harlem to help heal families because God had other plans. Why do I bring this whole thing up? It's because God is love, and love never fails. God is love, and love never fails. We're going to look at 1 Corinthians 13. And then I will try and get through. I had like 8 hours of material. We'll only do three, so that's less than half. No, come on now, that's too much. We'll do like two and change. 1 Corinthians 13, verse 1. And yet I will show you the most excellent way. If I speak in the tongues of men or angels but do not have love, I am only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have faith that can move mountains but do not have love, I am nothing. If I give all I possess to the poor and give my body over to hardship that I may boast, but I do not have love, I gain nothing. Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It does not dishonor others. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love never fails. Love never fails. Love never, ever fails. Love trusts God's timing. Love actively cares for others. Love appreciates and is completely grateful for what it has. It is not arrogant or disrespectful. It seeks the best interests of others while not carrying a quick temper or storing accounts of people's mistakes to weaponize them and use them later. Love wants no part of injustice or impurity, but dives at all opportunities to live a life that celebrates truth. Love will shield others no matter what, trust the intentions of others no matter what, never lose faith no matter what, and hang in there even if everything and everyone is falling apart, because love will never, ever let you down. Love never fails. That was the SBSV, the Stephen Bible Study Version of that passage. But what's, you know, another way to look at it is that love won't get upset at the train or the MTA for its delays. Love will buy the M&Ms from the kid on the train who's not doing it for no basketball team or no football team. Love doesn't harbor ill feelings about people moving to Georgia and paying less for their mansion than you are paying for your closet. Love will put a muzzle on New York pride and ask for help. Love doesn't roll his eyes at the Showtime dancers, even no matter how late it is on the train. Love will let people in front of them in a packed staircase and not lose their cool when people jump on the train before you have a chance to leave it. Love doesn't keep tabs or grudges against people who played you. Love doesn't internally celebrate when a New England Patriot player gets injured. That's tough. It's like, oh. God, why? Love doesn't hate on people's happiness. Like, love doesn't just assume that people are pretending to be happy because maybe you're going through a hard time. Love takes care of everyone. Love trusts even when the system fails. Love hopes even when the system fails. Love perseveres even when the system fails. Because love will never fail. We are wrapping up our study on love today, but not really. Because as long as we are talking about God, we are talking about love. As long as the gospel is preached, we are talking about love. As long as Jesus is Lord and head of this church, we are talking about love. If a Bible is opened and a prayer is sent to heaven, we are talking about love. The Bible actually is not big enough to contain the subject matter of love. Not enough room. Love was around before time. So 1 John 4:8 says that God is love, and Hebrews 13:8 says that he is the same yesterday, today, and forever. That means that God was love before he had an outlet for his love. God has been pulsating with love before we were even in the picture. Then he makes the universe and the cosmos and gravity and light and land and ecosystems, and then says, you know what? I got to give all of this love to somebody. So let's make man in our image and unload all of this that's been building since before matter So the reason that love never fails is it's been around since God has. And it's going to be around forever. Before time was conceptualized, there was love. I tried studying love in multiple different languages and different cultures. In Hebrew, it's ahava. In Aramaic, it's rachma. In Greek, it's agape. I was looking at Latin. I was trying to if I could just figure out, like, if I could break this down enough through intellectual understanding, then I'll figure out there's some secret of, like, oh, here's what I've been missing. The problem with that is that no one in the Bible did that in their understanding of love. The apostles simply watched Jesus. That was it. They watched his behavior and stamped that as a definition of love forever. They saw him care for the physical needs of hungry people in Matthew 14. They saw him meet medical needs of the sick in Matthew 8. They saw him meet the emotional needs of the broken in Mark 5. They saw him listen to the oppressed and give a voice to the marginalized in John 4. They saw him handle corrupt government officials. They saw him handle Pharisees and demon-possessed people. They recalled him even making Judas feel part of the family. At that point at the Last Supper where everyone is confused, like, well, who could it be? I think that's because no one had a clue. Because of the way Jesus treated Judas. Because of his just no matter what love for him, like, well, he can't be anywhere in this room, because we would have known. If Jesus knew someone was going to betray him, he would have treated him differently. But he didn't. And the apostles got to witness 3 years of Jesus knowing who was going to do it, knowing that Peter was going to deny him to his face, and didn't treat any of them differently. They saw his love that never failed. And then John 13, let's read there right there. John 13, verse 35. After redefining love based on this man's behavior and attitude and actions, John 13, 34, says, a new command I give you, love one another as I have loved you. So you must love one another. By this, all men will know that you are my disciples. If you love one another, love like I did, and people will know who you're trying to be and where you are trying to go. Obviously, because love never fails. After giving the disciples such a clear, like, real life in the process of hardship picture of what it means to love, he says, now I need you to do that exact same thing. And don't worry, because love never fails. Matthew 22. Matthew 22 and verse 36. I'll start from verse 34. Matthew 22, 34. Hearing that Jesus had silenced the Sadducees, the Pharisees got together. One of them, an expert in the law, tested him with this question. Teacher, what is the greatest commandment in the law? Jesus replied, love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul and all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. The second is like it, love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments. That's it. All of the prophets and the commandments were leading to this. All of the Exodus and the Israelites trying to create a community and all the rules and all of that was building up to this moment right here of, listen, all you have to do is love God and love people. That's it. It took thousands of years of humans messing stuff up. And God said, you know what? Listen, no. Let me simplify this in a way that also makes it very clear what my intentions are. Just love God and love people. Our purpose in life, this is a big claim alert. Our purpose in life is to accept God's love, be changed by God's love, and distribute God's love. That's why we're here. That's it. If you're in that, like, I'm trying to find myself, trying to find me, well, I just gave you the answer for free. Accept God's love. Let that love change you and give other people that love. That's what we're here for. Even if you're here and you don't believe in God, that's what you're created to do. If you're here and you're fighting the reality, hey, listen, it's not, I didn't say it. That's what human beings are here to do. Accept, be changed, and distribute God's love. If you're looking for fulfillment somewhere else, you are chasing the wind. Just not there. Doesn't exist. And if you're settling for something else, you are wasting your life. Because that's not what you were created to do. An iPhone can hold paper down. It can, sure. That's a gigantic waste on what that thing was designed to do. We are designed to accept, be changed, and distribute God's love. Our purpose in life is that simple. It's hard to do, but it's simple to understand. What's interesting, this might have been common knowledge for everyone, but I literally just found this last week. That I thought with the love is patient, love is kind, you're supposed to, like, I have to work on love and work on patience and work on love and work on kindness and work on love. And I was like, oh, no, Stephen, like, by actively being more patient, I'm being more loving. By actively being more kind, I'm being more loving. Like, these things are attached to each other because they're the same thing. Because it says, this is that. Love is patient, so be patient, and you're going to grow in your love. I think it's harder for our brains to try and grow in our love without knowing what that means, which is why this is in the Bible, which took me 28 years to figure out that that was the order. But work on your patience, and you are working on your love. So in this purpose of life thing, the reason like I think it's so important for us to cover the subject matter of love is that that's what we're here to do. As humans, God designed us to be patient. Even if it goes against how we're feeling, that's how God puts you here, to be a patient person, to be a kind person, the person that doesn't hold grudges, to not keep records. Like, that's as challenging as it may seem, that's how you were built. It's what we're designed to do. We mess it up by putting a bunch of other stuff in there. But at the way God made you, you are patient. You are kind. We are all of these things. And the purpose in life is to accept God's love for us and let these things change us and give it to other people. Because love never fails. The world, though, has failed miserably. It is failing today, and it will continue to fail as time goes on. Politics are jacked up. We highlight democracy as a stamp of freedom, but government allegiances and red versus blue thinking has caused civil wars within our families, not fought with bullets and tanks, but with cold shoulders and segregation. There's still police brutality. There is still local terrorism. There is still systematic injustice specifically designed, approved, and funded to keep certain populations away from success. We are still having to convince people that black lives actually matter. Not as a movement, but as a concept. Like, that's still having to be explained to people. The world has failed miserably. We are killing babies and making it about legislature, making it about government rules and hospital procedures. We're killing children. We're at about a 50% divorce rate right now in the marriages. It's a coin toss. You can literally count off 1, 2, 1, 2, and all the twos are probably going to get divorced in 3 years. The world is tanking. The world is in a very, very bad place. Crisis in Sudan, in Nigeria, in North Korea, the list goes on and on and on. The world has claimed to have the answers and failed miserably. The solution, though, is not politics. It's not reform. It's not we got to get the right guy to support. It's none of that. It's love. The plan has always been love. Because love was here before we showed up and messed things up, it's consistently going to be the plan throughout. Because love never fails. Politics will fail. Governments will fail. Strategies will fail. But love is claiming that, listen, I will never fail. So I am the solution. God is the solution. You know, Stephen, that sounds corny, man. That sounds like a movie, like a corny Lifetime movie where it was just love that the person needed, and oh, now Santa is real again. Okay, sorry. We're good. It's just the teens here. You good, Renny? Okay, cool, cool, cool. Just making sure. But so in 1905, in Wales, a group of young people had a church service that had a prayer service at the end of it, and they made an announcement and said, "Hey, like, if you want to take your Christianity seriously, stay behind. We're having a secret meeting after the end of this prayer service." Handful of people stayed. And what that small group of young people decided to do in 1905 in Wales was four things. They were going to confess their sins and ask God for forgiveness. They were going to remove all distractions from their life. And three, they were going to be totally yielded and obedient to the Holy Spirit. Four, publicly make known that Jesus is Lord of their lives. Four things. It's called the Welsh Revival. The change in the country of Wales was ridiculous. Churches began to get, services were 10 hours long. And people like were jumping in through the windows. The pastors didn't know what to do. They would literally sit at the pulpit in just shock. And people would just start singing and praising God in this packed, that's to build more churches. Because this small group of people decided we're going to be completely, whatever the Spirit says, that's what we're going to do. In 6 months, 150,000 people turned their life over to Christ. 150,000 people in 6 months. The crime rate dropped to almost nothing. Police had nothing to do. They would actually, they became security for the church events because they had nothing else to do. The court system shut down. Judges had nothing. No one was suing each other. There was there's no reason for us to, we'll just sit here, I guess. The alcohol trade decimated. Bars closed down. Fathers were more present in the family. Schools changed. Society changed. People that were poor were welcomed into the homes of other people, and there was no more poverty. This is real life. This happened in our planet. Everything changed because they chose to be moved by the Spirit. The Spirit is God, and God is love. And love never fails. Do you want to see change in the world? Well, love like Jesus did. He's a 33-year-old guy, shows up, works at this for just a couple of years, and we're talking about him 2,000 years later. The world has changed. Because a man decided to love. Love changes everything. We sometimes get in the way of this, though. I love God. It's just people that just test my patience, you know? I feel like God, if I could just have all my friends just be God, and it would be so much easier to just love and appreciate and 1 John 4, pop that bubble real quick. First John 4, let's read from verse 19. Because we love because he first loved us. Whoever claims to love God yet hates his brother or sister is a liar. For whoever does not love their brother and sister who they have seen cannot love God whom they have not seen. Now, I think for a long time, I thought what this meant was that, hey, like if you're doing really good at loving people, I'm sorry, at loving God and not great at loving people, just repent, you know, and share that equally. Actually, if you don't love people, you don't love God. There's not a work on one and work on the other thing. It's a combined entity right here that the evidence of your love for God is seen through your love for people. You cannot claim to love God. Now, I think we see hate here. Like, okay, cool. I don't hate anyone. I just don't like them very much. So I'm in the clear. The problem with that is that we're reading English. And this is not the language that would have been written initially. And a more accurate representation there is to love less. is just to know that you're capable of loving this much and choosing to love that much. That's hate. That's how Jesus would describe what it means to hate someone. So like, I know that I can love people that I like this much, but if you're racist, I'm gonna love you like that much. Or if you disrespect my family, I'm gonna love you like that much. If you hurt my feelings over and over again, I'm gonna just willingly dropping the level of love to a lower state is the Bible's definition of hate. Which makes this very real all of a sudden. And not just say, well, at least I don't wish anyone would die. But do you withhold love from someone for whatever reason? Hate. So for us to love like Jesus did, for us to love the way that God had designed us to love, we have to first understand that, yeah, we need to love God. But you do that through being patient with people, being kind with people, not envying people, not holding the grudges against. That's the evidence of your love for God. Because we can't do the other way. Because I think what it is that we think we love God because we feel good about God, and we like what God stands for, and like we like the justice, we like heaven, we like all of the, but God himself doesn't actually get to experience our love for him until we love people. So we can be, this is why the Lord guys were confused in Matthew 7. Like, hey, but didn't we do these things for in your name? It's like, yeah, it's like, but I don't know who you are though. Because you didn't actually love people enough to show that you love me. That can get in the way. Or, I love God, just not really his commandments. Like what he instructs us to do, you know, like me and him are super close, but we're more like cool roommates that will see each other every now and then. And if you ask me to take out the garbage, I'm like, if I have time, we'll see. You can't, 1 John 5, let's read from verse 1. Everyone who believes that Jesus Christ was born of God, everyone who believes that Jesus is the Christ is born of God. And everyone who loves the Father loves his child as well. This is how we know that we love the children of God, by loving God and carrying out his commandments. In fact, this is love for God, to keep his commands, and his commands are not burdensome. That's how God feels our love. Not exclusively through singing or worship or prayer or adoration. It's like, hey, all that stuff is great, but if you could just love people and follow my commands, that's how I feel and experience your love. What's amazing about this is a love can have the same effect on a situation that God can. Like in a situation where it's like, man, like we really need God and like to make this work. Yes. And you can bring him in by showing love. Like we're Hannah and I are the move is, I thought I could be done in 48 hours. I really thought that we could pack the truck on Sunday, unpack on Monday, and just like, hey, like everything is good. Nope. Like not even close. And it has been very frustrating for me to feel like I almost feel like I'm letting her down by not being able to complete this thing and kind of like give her a place that's ready to live and be comfortable in. And I think the way that I respond in those moments of failure is just to kind of withdraw and be cold and like, I'll figure it out. Just give me space. And I see that it's hurt Hannah. Like I haven't done a great job at loving this past week in my attempt to make stuff work. I've dropped the ball, which is not love. But in the same way that God just created matter out of nothing, I can change. Like I can be different. I can grow in real life and be a different person going forward. Because that's the power of love. The power of love is the power of God. It's that powerful. Because love never fails. I mean, think about, like, what else can make that claim? What else can say, like, nah, like, 10 times out of 10, I'm going to succeed. I'm going to get this right every time that I try. There's not a lot of stuff in the world. There's nothing in the world that can say that confidently and actually come through with it. But love will never fail. So I can be different. Wherever you feel like this is something, God, that I just think is going to be a vice for the rest of my life. You know, if you really believe that God can change anything, then the secret might just be like, how can I implement love in this situation? How can I plug in? It's funny, I was talking to one of my friends upstairs before this. I'm going to be in Nigeria for a week in August. The church is celebrating the 30-year anniversary. My dad helped plant the church. They would have had him come and speak at that. So they invited me to come and speak at the anniversary service, which I'm very, you know, I'm excited about. But it is choosing to go and see family that have said some very hurtful things to my mother. Some very, very, like, I had decided that I would cut this people off for the rest of my life because of what they said about my mom. And I feel like I'm in a better place now. But now willingly going and interacting with this kind of conflict. I mean, if I try and intellectually slide my way through, I'm in a lot of trouble. Because there's only so much that I can, like, juggle in my head to make myself okay with being in that room. But love is God. And it's very hard to hold these ill feelings if I'm also holding God. If I'm holding love and patience and kindness and not delighting in evil, I have to look at this differently. I mean, it doesn't make things easy, but I think it makes it necessary. And I will succeed because love never fails. You know, Brooklyn has been home for a long time. Even when I was in Queens, even when we were in Maryland, I felt like this is, you know, like this is home. We've barely been here for 2 years. Honestly, I wanted to do a lot more while we were here. I feel like in many ways I didn't. I think I fell short in many ways. But love never fails. I was trying to figure, you know, which one of these things is going to stick with me the most. And I think love always hopes is something that that you need all the time. And it's not hopes like, and I hope the weather's nice tomorrow. Like, you never know. It's a hope that comes out of an understanding about how powerful God is and expectation that he's going to surpass what we can think of. So my hope is that Brooklyn can be absolutely transformed by the people in this room. That our workplaces, our families, our apartment complexes, our neighborhoods can be completely transformed by the love shown to God and to people by the disciples in this room today. My hope is that all the teens in this room grow to become leaders in God's kingdom and become the people that end up leading the church that my son will be a member of. My hope is that the marriages can be healed and strengthened and people can genuinely love the fact that they are married. I love my wife. She went outside, so I'm pointing at no one right now. Hannah is incredible. Yes, she is. Hannah is amazing. I'm going to heaven because God put Hannah in my life. I also, and so Hannah and I actually went back and forth about whether or not I should say this, but you know me. I'm going to say it. So marriage is not the hardest thing I've ever done. I actually really, really enjoy my marriage. I would rather spend time with my wife than any other human being on the planet. I don't feel like, well, see, like, hey, like that's, I don't think conflict is necessary. I don't think fighting and arguments are necessary. They might happen, but I think we have become so comfortable with the idea that the conflict just means things are real, that we've made the standard that. And can I say something? So that we're scaring the single people. And let me not say, I'm not saying that it's like just this rainbow of Skittles and harp music every day, but it's honestly pretty close to it. It really is. And I know that it won't always be like, but let me, you know what, just me, like I love Hannah. And I enjoy my time with Hannah. And that can become, I've given her reasons to not love me back. And she chooses to love me above any other person in the world. And she's my best friend. And I love, if just to kind of counteract all the potential like other things you may have heard, which is true and it's real, but you also have the option, because love never fails, of having an amazing marriage, an incredible, fulfilling, like I just can't wait to get home. I don't have to escape. I feel great and safe and loved at home. Marriage. Where am I? All right, well, I also hope through God and through love that every teen that was in the teen ministry between 2005 and 2009 that aren't disciples right now will come back because of what they know is real and what is here. And because of us. Because of our commitment to them and our faith and our hope and our consistency, that all of these guys and girls will come back to what's here, and maybe just if the Knicks could be good, I know it's asking a lot. I know it's asking so much, but God is love, and love never fails. All right, love you guys.
Thank you for listening to this broadcast of the New York City Church of Christ in Brooklyn. For more information about our church, visit bkchurch.com.